Hello, and welcome to the Data Busters podcast, the podcast for all things school data. Spring's on its way here in England, and green shoots are popping up everywhere as our part of the world warms up again. And here at Data Busters HQ, we've got lots of news which we're looking forward to sharing with you. In this episode of the Data Busters podcast, we look at creating a strategy to develop your use of student data, helping you to make sense of the often confusing world of education data. I'm Richard Selfridge, author of Data Busting for Schools, and joining me, as always, is Jamie Pembroke, Data Buster extraordinaire, insight facilitator, and all-round data guru. Hello, Jamie. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Excellent. Have you been keeping busy?
Yeah. And enjoying the sunshine. Yeah. It looks like the biblical deluge has ended for now.
So exactly. Spring has sprung in the Northern Hemisphere. It's been good to see, hasn't it? Exactly. It just seems like it's been raining since forever. It's just 40 days. Never mind 40 days and 40 nights. It's been going on for just forever. The ground is saturated. But we've had a few days of sunshine, and there's a definite sense that we're moving forward, which is a good thing.
I've just looked out the window. It's raining.
Well, exactly. That's about typical. Good stuff. So we should probably catch up again. So the last time we were podcasting, we were discussing just the international comparisons and looking at TIMSS and PIRLS and OECD and PISA.
Yeah.
There hasn't been much. Education news is interesting at the moment because there's obviously a lot of discussion about attendance is obviously one of the big things that everybody's discussing. But those international comparisons, there were some news things before Christmas. I haven't seen much more.
I think that the main reason for looking at that is that we can get a bit gloomy, can't we, about the state of things. And as we said, there are major sort of structural problems, problems with funding, problems with special educational needs, problems with attendance, as you just said. But actually, in terms of academic standards, things are looking pretty good, both in primary and in secondary.
Yeah.
So there are good things. It's not all doom and gloom. There are good things.
No, exactly. And it's going to be interesting to see when we go through the summer sequence of assessments of exams, Key Stage 2 and GCSE A-level, but to see how things are moving again, how the COVID shock has affected everybody, because we know from all of the international comparisons and the national ones as well that there's obviously been an impact. But I think schools are certainly, they're getting back on track, and all the schools I talk to, you can see people are ready, and they've been preparing pupils as best they can. So I'm expecting to see some interesting move forward this summer.
But I'm sort of anticipating that standards at Key Stage 2, and it's we're very close to that, and GCSEs, it's happening, it's just around the corner. I'm expecting that standards at Key Stage 2 will go up again, that will recover further, but it is interesting, worrying, concerning how the persistent absence issue is going to affect that, if it will affect it. One would assume that it will. When you've got over 20% of children deemed to be persistently absent in primary and approaching high 20s, approaching 30, about 28%, I think last time I looked at it, persistently absent in secondary. And of course, the government has now come out with a new measure of this, haven't they?
Explain for people who haven't heard about this. It's an interesting thing, because the government is obviously focused on attendance, which is fair enough. And luckily for them, they'd set various things up so they can track attendance. But tell us, how does this new measure work?
So there's a really good, summary of these sort of new rules and regulations, but that came out in Schools Week a couple of months ago. I can't remember. Anyway, if you Google it, you'll find it.
We'll put it in the show notes.
The main one, the one that caught the headlines was children that miss 10 or more sessions. So have 10 or more sessions of unauthorized absence. That's the important one. In a 10-week rolling period.
Okay, 10-week rolling period.
10 weeks, that 10 weeks straddles school holidays. Mm-hmm. So if you're early in the academic year, it will count back 2 weeks in the previous academic year. So it ignores the holidays, keeps counting back. We already have a persistent absence measure, which is missing 10 percent or more of your sessions. So it's kind of like that, but it's different. So it's a rolling, this sort of rolling measure. So 10 weeks, 10 weeks, 10 weeks, constantly. And schools can, they have to use their discretion, can fine parents for this. Mm. So in theory, you can actually...
Or do they refer parents to be fined rather than fine them?
Yes. It's a really weird one because they're saying that a partial week counts as a week. Any week that has just one session. So if you have a week, let's imagine you have a holiday that finishes on a Thursday and you come back on a Friday, then that one Friday that counts as a week.
Okay.
But that sort of changes things, actually. I mean, I was thinking about this recently. I tweeted about it, that what would have made a bit more sense and been more consistent and clearer if it was 10 or more sessions out of 100, the last 100 possible sessions. Because 10-week rolling period is not always the same thing. It could be 10 full weeks, or it could be, in which case, that is 10%, because there are 100 sessions in 10 weeks. Is that right, I think?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there's 10 sessions a week, so morning and afternoon, and 5 days a week, so it's 10 sessions.
So it's kind of nearly 10%, but it's not quite 10%. In one 10-week rolling period, it could be a lot less than that, because some of those would be partial weeks anyway. So actually, it's not. In some cases, it will be 10% absence, which aligns with persistent absence. I mean, in some cases, it would be like 50, it could be like 12, 13, 14% absence or something, because there are fewer sessions in that 10-week rolling period. So anyway, I mean, I'm just sort of getting technical about it, really, but I think there'll be better ways of doing it if they want to do this thing that would have been clear and more consistent, what have you, but easier to understand. But anyway, that's what they're doing. Mm. 10 sessions or more unauthorized absence in a 10-week rolling period, and that can trigger fines.
Yeah. And I think that will be interesting as well, because one of the issues in schools always is the fact that if you start at the beginning of the academic year, the beginning of September, you know, a pupil can be away for a week at the beginning of September, and then it looks like their absence is terrible because you're only comparing it to a relatively short period. Whereas I think it makes sense to make it a rolling 10-week period in that way.
Yeah, I guess in that case, you know, it's fairer, because if it does, it's a good point that if it does start from the beginning of an academic year and they miss something at the start, then it looks, as you say, they just got this shocking absence. If you roll it back, it doesn't look.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's definitely something which they're focusing on. And again, so we'll see how that develops. I know that schools are struggling a little bit with how you actually track that, because obviously a lot of systems aren't set up to do that. But I'm sure that will be happening fairly soon.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I say, I'm sure that if anybody's got any comments about that or any questions, do get in touch. I say we're more than happy to help where we can on that one. But we're going to start with some news. So because obviously you and I have been doing, I don't know, any number of events. We've done discos, we've done data busting road shows and all kinds of things. We've done umpteen podcasts. We've even written a book together. So it did seem that the time had come for us to actually work even more closely. And I'm really pleased that I'm now going to be working with Insight. I've joined Insight to work as an education data consultant.
I know. Wow.
Which means
I think we've been working together for nearly 10 years, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the first time we met was we went to see Ofsted, didn't we? We went to see Sean Harford.
We did.
We went to Ofsted and talked
the
to
The much
some...
missed Sean Harford. Exactly. Yes.
Yes.
We did.
We
went to see Sean. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And statisticians, and talk to them about data. And I think that was our first meeting. And since then, we've been working together very closely. We've been doing Data Busters. We've written a book together, as you say. Done plenty of podcasts, and here we are. Now you've joined Insight. So why have you joined Insight?
Well, exactly. I know. I'm really looking forward to working with Insight. I'm looking forward to it because there's two main areas that I'm going to be working on. One of which is you're working with schools, providing a consultancy to schools where schools have questions or are looking to develop what they're doing with data, not just for schools, with MATs, other groups of schools. It's all kinds of loose formations of schools. Again, just helping them to plan and make use of their data, which is something which I've been doing a lot myself. But I think that makes sense to bring that under the Insight banner. You were saying that you have a lot of conversations with schools where they're obviously
what they really need is somebody who can support them through that, but which is not your speciality. Your speciality is really helping them to understand the intricacies of, particularly statutory data, but also, you know, how they manage that data in different ways. So I think that one big chunk of work is going to be interesting. I've been doing it myself, but it will make a load of sense to do that with Insight and for Insight. And then the second one is for us to set up or to develop Insight's to kind of information sharing so that we're able to write blogs, write pieces, create audio, video, podcasts, this kind of thing, but within a, you know, just with the backing of Insight. So we've got a bit more time and we can really dive into things. We can analyze data. We can write opinion pieces on all things at student data. So those two things I'm really looking forward to. And then just that sort of being a voice within the Insight organization as, you know, as the system develops. So I'm really looking forward to both of those things.
Yeah. So we've got, there's over 3,000 schools using our system now, and we will be supporting those schools. We'll continue to do Data Buster sessions. So if you want to, whether you're an Insight school or not, if you want us to come and do a Data Buster session for your group of schools in your area for maths, then we'll continue to do that. If you are using Insight, then we can tailor it to the system. So we can talk about the sort of philosophy of collecting data and using data and what you should and shouldn't do with data, but we can kind of tie it to the system and sort of show you practical examples of how it will work. So there's a lot we can do.
Yeah, exactly. And today we thought, as an introduction on this pod, we'd just discuss how do you go about creating a strategy to develop your use of student data, and talk about the kinds of things which I've done and found really useful when working with schools. And you can, again, it's one of these things that I have to hesitate, because otherwise I get too evangelical about it. Because when you see when you see schools getting to the point where they're really beginning to see that they've got high quality data, which is really helping them to have, you know, fantastic conversations with the people who actually make a difference for students, you know, who are in class or working with pupils, and they're using all of their really great insights to put things in place to really support students. It makes such a big difference. So in terms of developing a data strategy, I say we're going to have a look at a couple of things, three main things. The first of which is looking at data literacy, and then thinking about auditing, and then creating a data strategy. So this is one of the things which we've talked a lot, and again, we've got loads of pods about this, so people can go back and hopefully they can use the Data Busters podcast for this. But one of the key things is about data literacy generally, and helping schools to develop their own data literacy. I found this when I talk to schools, and they, you know, often somebody will come because they're aware that their use of data, they want to develop it, want to improve it, they want to give it some kind of firm underpinning, so that there is a very clear understanding of what they're trying to do and why they're trying to develop their use of data. And again, it's a fascinating thing. I often do this, and we've done this a lot at Data Bus events, asking people, you know, how much training have you had on standardized assessment? Yes. How much training have you had on understanding standardized scores and so on? And there are all kinds of bits. You must have calls all the time where people are asking you questions. We've got to the point where it's become cliche with the two of us talking about scale scores and standardized scores and the difference between the two and so on.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, one of the most common questions, I think we've mentioned this, and I will be mentioning it, are DISCO, which is this Thursday.
Oh, our next one is Thursday, exactly. So for those people who get this podcast fresh off,
we should get a little plug-in for that. But I think there are three tickets left, maybe.
I think there were,
You know, so if you can, if you still want to, you can get in. But, anyway.
Exactly. So that's Thursday, the 25th of April, if you're listening to this before that date. If afterwards, you've missed that one. But there is another one coming up.
In Bristol. One of the questions I get asked a lot is how do we go about measuring the progress of children with special educational needs? So there's all sorts of stuff you have to unpack in this. So it seems quite a simple question, and I guess they might want me to say, okay, just do it like this, and they go, okay, fine. But first of all, you need to ask, like, why do you want to measure? What is it you want to measure? Are you expecting to be able to measure? It's when you start asking questions like, are you expecting to measure all children with SEND in exactly the same way? Yeah. And that's where things start. Are you able to assess them in exactly the same way? Are they all the same? You go, well, of course they're not. And you go, this is where things start to, So yeah. I think if you go back a long way as to why we collected data, as I've said lots of times before, the reason why we collected data was not to necessarily to improve educational standards, which is the reason why we should be collecting data. It was to keep somebody somewhere outside of your school probably happy. So you collected it for Ofsted, you collected it for the LA advisor, you collected it for whoever, and you gave them some numbers and then they were happy and they went away. But that's not why we collect data. That's not the reason why we collect data. We collect data to support children, support children's learning. I think there was the making data work. No, it was the predecessor, was that 2016 report on data management. It said, the be ruthless, only collect data that is required to support children's learning or something like that. But be ruthless. Only collect data that's needed to support children's learning. And when you sort of apply that philosophy, you're right, so what is it that we need? What is it that we want to do? And I guess that's what you're trying to do. And in terms of developing like literacy, once you start to become more data literate, can you be data literate? I know what it means.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's worth.
Data is numbers, but literate as well. But okay,
exactly. But you have to understand, you know, the as we often say. But again, it's to allowing people to understand that, you know, obviously there are benefits to data, and there are lots of those. But there are also, you know, there are some issues which you need to be aware of. And, you know, we've talked about this a great deal. But one of the things which I have found is that working with schools is just giving people the opportunity or the freedom to understand that sometimes we're not too certain. We're trying not to be wrong. Yeah. But that we, you know, that data has limitations, you know, particularly when you're trying to measure people. And so I think there's quite a bit of work there to be done, because again, for a lot of us who've been in education for a while, you know, you're encouraged to be very, you were very much encouraged to be very certain in the 2010s. Whereas now, say, I think there's a bit more of a flexibility. So that all that work about data literacy is just letting people understand the fuzziness of data, the advantages of it, the disadvantages.
Once you build that, then people start to question things more, and they realise that it can be really powerful, but it also has limitations.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely vital to go on to that sort of next step.
Well, absolutely, because
you can do with it.
Yeah, if you want people to then develop, you know, if you do genuinely want to improve your use of data, you need to get people to understand what you can and can't do with the data, what inferences you can and can't make, what are reasonable, what are not. So that's one of the key things which I have found to be incredibly useful with schools. You work with senior leaders or the governors or whoever, you know, teachers, so that people begin to understand, okay, so we're going to give you a bit of freedom, but we're going to start questioning things, and then we're going to start putting things back in place. And I've done that, and I generally, and I recommend all schools to do this, is to do some kind of an audit where you have a look at, well, what are we actually doing? What information are we collecting? What do people believe about that information? What do they understand from that information? And that audit depends on, again, the stakeholders you have in your school, because obviously you've got senior leaders who are making a lot of decisions, but you want people in classrooms to be making decisions and feeding into what will eventually become your plan for improving your use of data, which I usually use the term data strategy for that point, because I think it helps people to understand, okay, yeah, we're actually trying to improve what we're doing. We're trying to make it more efficient, more effective. But so that audit. But then you often, as you will know, because you've done lots of work with this, you need to look at, well, who else do we need to talk to? So it could be your governors. If you're in a MAP, you might need to support your trustees to understand things as well. And sometimes you might need to talk about your community. So it might be your parents, you know, the carers of children and so on. You want to have as many people involved as you can to talk to all of them to say, look, we are looking to develop what we're doing, but really broadening that audit out and then bringing people on board to say, okay, yeah, we need your opinion.
Yeah. So my line on, yes, you have to report to various audiences. Mm-hmm. You're going to report to senior leaders and MAT exec boards and LA advisors and Ofsted inspectors, if they don't look at your data, obviously, but you know, you're going to use it to report to them in some way or another. But my thinking on this is that the data that you use to report to them is a byproduct of a system that is primarily designed to support children's learning. So you work out what you need to do at that end. That will then generate some data that you can use at the other end. But don't start from the wrong end. If you start from the wrong end, that's where we ended up with these tracking systems that did like mad things. It would be, and the good old days of this child was a 2B and now they're a 2B plus, which we're going to talk about disco again on Thursday. And you say that now and everyone laughs. We know that no one knew. Everyone knew. There was an immerta. It's like of silence. They go, yeah, no, don't say this is a nice convenient thing that we've got going on here. Don't rock it.
Yeah.
We like doing this. It works. And you go, well, it doesn't work. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help anyone improve anything. It's just made up data. But it keeps somebody happy. And as long as we all keep quiet.
Yeah.
So we move away from that and we do something better. I mean, you've talked about standardized scores for a start. Standardization, the clues in the, clues in the name. But the other thing you talk about a lot is the need for sort of longevity, isn't it? That you build these things to be not just like, oh, let's change it. You have to have this strategy. It's a long-term plan. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to think about these things in the longer term. Because again, for all, everybody who works in schools will know, there are loads of things which schools are doing which they haven't actually been doing for very long. You know, we've got this new thing. We're doing this new thing in literacy. We're doing this new thing in maths. We're doing this new thing in reading. And so therefore, what you want to have is to put something in place so that in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, you've built a bigger picture of what's happening in your school. And you, again, the thing which I encourage everybody to think about is when you're thinking about strategic use of data, you're using the data, so you're moving away from the idea of just looking at progress, looking at 2 points, looking at snapshots of things, to building that bigger picture. And you definitely need to do that. You need to future-proof your data, make some decisions now that you're going to stick with, so that, and again, for the maths that I've been working with for multiple years, you can begin to see the schools I've worked with for a long time, you can begin to see, okay, I've now got 4-5 years worth of data. I can see the trends. I can see how, you know, where the need is across things. But again, in that auditing phase, and I find this with schools a lot of the time, because again, you know, whilst you and I and lots of those people listening to this podcast, hopefully we'll have got to the point where we know, okay, we do need to develop people's data literacy, be a bit more skeptical about the data, understand the limitations of the inferences you can make. A lot of people in schools are not in that position, so they're still kind of holding on to truths which they need to just have some time to think, actually, do I really need to do this? Am I doing this for the best possible reasons? You know, what are any of these assumptions that I'm making warranted or not warranted? It can come as a shock to some people to say, when you particularly talk to an occasional governor and you say, yeah, when we measure pupils, well, it's somewhat inaccurate, and they don't like that.
Yeah, this is a really important point, and it's a really interesting one. You know, I am school governor, as you are as well.
Yeah.
They're an important part of that kind of machine, but often because they're not in the classroom, they're not dealing with, unless they're teachers themselves, it's very difficult for them to really understand how limited some of the data is, how inaccurate, unreliable some of this information is, that you can place too much or kind of weight on it and have too many expectations of it and think that it is pinpoint accurate. If you come from a background where you measure things in really precise ways, I've got a friend who's he's retired now, but you know, he's an engineer, and he ran a company that made diesel injectors or something for truck engines, you know, and he ran this, hundreds of people building these things, and they measure things and they build things, you know, really tight tolerances. These are engineered things, and so he sort of brings that to other sort of areas of his life and just thinks, well, we can measure this in this way. Like, you can measure things. Of course you can measure things. You can measure children. You can measure learning. And you can to a degree. You can use a standardized test and you can do another standardized test and you can see that it's gone up by a bit. And you think, well, it probably suggests they've improved maybe relative to other children. It might tell us something. But it's not pinpoint accurate. We're not talking about measuring things down to the micron level. It just millimeter, or even the centimeter, or possibly even the meter. It's just so governors can really struggle with that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why can't we measure these things?
It is a tricky one, exactly. So therefore, understanding that, but then also recognizing that the framework within which we work, you know, whilst the data wave, we've moved past it in many ways, people still are very aware of the fact that particularly statutory assessments, you know, if you're in primary school, your Key Stage 2 results it yep. matters that you have some degree of accuracy in your prediction of those key stage two results. And that gets quite interesting because, again, so people want accuracy, but again, it's difficult to be absolutely accurate. So therefore, I think in that audit phase of any development of a data strategy, it's helping people to say, okay, we need to move away from some of the assumptions which we've made because again, to use a great word, the paradigm has changed. You know, the situation is different. Yes, you need to be very aware of those kind of key points in school where somebody else is going to come in and look at something, and particularly if you've got a statutory assessment. But you can develop your use of data so that you're actually doing things better, so that by the point time the children get to a point where they're going to be assessed in a way that's going to be reported back to the DfE, that you have supported the pupils as much as you can. You've helped them to develop their knowledge as much as you can. So that's kind of the third phase. Once you've gone through, I say, developing data literacy, looking at auditing where you currently are, and just understanding what the pressures in any given school organization are, then I'm actually saying, okay, well, let's come up with something that's actually a data strategy. So we're actually going to write something down and say, this is what we're going to try to do, what we're going to plan to do. Often that is sorting out your assessment. In terms of the assessment that you're going to use, that's going to be reported or it's going to be gathered and collated and assessed. And there are some issues around that. It's also looking at the extended data that you can use. And again, we've talked a lot about this. And the thing which I love about Insight is the fact you can capture that information. You can put it into the system. Lots of data tracking systems are quite limited in what they'll allow you to capture. But if you can capture, you know, readiness to learn, attitude to learning, if you can capture, you know, what provision mapping and so on, and if you can capture all that information within your data system, then you can begin to develop that and ensure that you've got the highest quality, most accurate, as long as you understand what that means, you've got the most accurate data, and you've got that in there. And then once you put all that data in place, then you can begin to say, okay, well, let's develop what we're going to do. Let's make sure we're not doing anything in a rush. We're not changing things in a hurry, but we're going to make changes in the first year, in the first 3 years, in the next 5 years, to develop our use of data. We've got high quality data, which we're going to use in a particular way. And again, really thinking about developing that. It's very hard to get away from the idea of, you know, pupil progress and pupil progress meetings. But it's possible. And schools that have done that have got to the point of saying, no, actually, what we're using the data for, we've got this high quality data, which we're going to develop. And then we'll begin to use that to have these conversations that we need to have to support pupils in class.
Yeah. I think it's that you talk about the progress mindset a lot. Mm. And it's a really hard thing to shift on from that when we have had, I don't know how many years we've had progress measures. We had levels of progress measures. We've got value added. We've had value added. We still have value added. We have progress 8. We have all
expected
these
progress
measures. The old levels expected progress measure. It casts a long shadow. You know, the legacy lives on. And schools are still sort of in that mindset that's why we have systems. We have systems to do that. Honestly, no, that's not what your system is for. Your system, as you just mentioned, the main reason for having a system, whichever system it is, whether it's Insight or something else, doesn't matter. The main purpose of having a system is to capture all of the information that you deem to be useful in one place securely. That's another thing, you know, I'm looking at you. That's one of the problems with having spreadsheets that get shared around and emailed to people and stuff. It is a problem. You need a secure system that is capable of storing all of your data in one place, whether that's contextual data, academic attainment data, you know, you mentioned provisions and all that sort of stuff. Get it all in one place so you can then start to triangulate all this information. Mm-hmm. That is what I think the system's for.
Exactly. You know, and as a small insight as well, because again, I've been doing various things, getting ready for my role and just really having a good think about, you know, the GDPR implications. A lot of people in school, you do have to kind of say, keeping stuff in a spreadsheet is not particularly secure. You know, there are rules about how you can capture information and what you should and shouldn't be doing. Yeah. And particularly if you end up with stuff on your system that refers to pupils who left some time ago. And yes, you might have an educational reason for keeping them, but anyway, there's some issues there. But I say the work I do is basically getting people to the point and allowing people the freedom to think about what is it we actually want to do with all this information. Because again, the long and the short of it is, it's not going away. It's not like in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, we're not going to be using this student information. No. We need to use it, I say, more efficiently, more effectively. And that's the thing which I'm really looking forward to. I've been doing it lots already, but with, as I say, within Insight, I'm really looking forward to just doing yet more of that and really looking to develop that. And it's this conversation which I'm loving having, because 10 years ago when you and I first met, we'd be having the kind of some of these little bits we talked about during the data literacy conversations, but the pushback in schools was enormous at the time. People just didn't want, they couldn't understand that because they were so locked into the progress mindset. It's eased over the last 10 years. In the last 4 years, it's been much better to be able to have these conversations with people saying, okay, what are you actually going to do to improve your use of data? And that's the thing which I'm really looking forward to as we move forward.
So we'll leave that with people.
I think that is kind of like a main thought there, is to say, let's just, you know, so think about what you're doing in school at the moment. How are you changing the way which, how have you changed in the last 10 years so that you're moving away from that progress mindset and you're moving towards that, okay, we need to harness our data to actually make a difference for the pupils who need us to make the difference for them.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully we will be, you know, doing this online. If you want to get in touch with us, we can organize Teams calls, an initial sort of Teams call or whatever, to discuss these things and then maybe put a plan together for some further support. So that's, you know, another option.
Exactly. If you're an Insight person, get in touch with us via Insight and get in touch with Jamie or me that way. But if you're not and you want to get in touch, let's say, just send us a message, get in touch, because there's loads of stuff that we can help you with that can point you in the right direction. We do a lot of work just supporting schools just to get you to the point of saying, okay, yeah, have the freedom to make these decisions and make a difference for those pupils in schools. So there you have it. We hope that our discussions about thinking strategically about student data will help you to consider how you might want to develop in future. The Data Busters podcast is published regularly during the academic year and it's available on all good podcast outlets. And if you like what we're doing, please do recommend us to others. If you have any questions, feel free to send in a voice recording or contact us on Twitter, either at Databusting, which is me, or at Jay Pembroke, which is Jamie. Our Data in Schools conferences, our Data Discos, they roll along with events in Leeds, if you're quick, and Bristol in June, which are now on sale, and details are at disco.org.uk. And those sold-out discos in Solihull, Brentford, Warrington, Colchester. And if you'd like us to put on a disco near you or a Data Busters event, please get in touch and we'll see what we can do. And don't forget to get your copy of Data Proof Your School and let us know what you think about our solutions for schools. So until we meet again, keep data busting.